Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Rowan Scarborough, I'm very pleased to say, is in the house. He is a historically significant figure in the national security reporting business in this country, as far as I'm concerned. His career spans some 26 years at the Washington Times, among other publications. He has contributed to our understanding of these issues with his visits from time to time, and he's always a welcome guest. Rowan, thank you so much for finding some time to join us today. Good to talk with you.
Frank, great to be with you.
Rowan, one of the things that I've particularly admired about your reporting over the years is you have an understanding of and have really shed considerable light upon something that might be called the culture of the military, the social fabric, if you will, of our armed forces. And the assaults that have been made against it over the years, particularly of the Obama administration, culminating most recently, I guess, in its decision to insinuate into the military transgender individuals as some sort of social engineering to, I guess, improve their status in the population more generally. Rowan, talk a little bit about the implications of that for the military. And you've reported that the House Armed Services Committee, which I guess is in the process now of marking up its National Defense Authorization Act for next year, is going to be taking up.
That's right. President Obama lifted the ban on transgender troops serving openly in the military. And that has put a lot of pressure on the chain of command, because it injects commanders directly into decisions about how someone transitions from a male to a female, and how are they treated by other soldiers and service members, and do they get to take time off or not time off. But that's just the beginning, because Defense Secretary Ash Carter left a very important deadline on his desk when he left the Pentagon in January, and James Mattis now has to make the decision on whether the Pentagon is going to actively recruit transgender people into the military. And that's a very, very big decision, because there's about 20 stipulations that have to be met on whether the person is even suitable to join. So a whole new bureaucracy is going to be created. And in the meantime, I reported today, they've been doing sensitivity training that is supposed to culminate next month. And they're given possible vignettes about how do you deal with a male to female, who's in the shower with male genitalia, but they're actually in the woman's shower. So these are things the Army is putting out about how soldiers have to deal. So you can see it's a big revolution inside the military, without a doubt. And it's in the lap of James Mattis right now. And the House Armed Services Committee, some Republicans want to write something into the bill that frames this, curtails it, puts limits on it. And they were still drafting some stuff yesterday. And it should play out later today when they mark up the bill. But it may have something to do with, if you're going to do this, Secretary Mattis, let's not actively go out and recruit transgenders as if, you know, that they are a special diversity-driven group that we have to have, you know, a half a percent of. Let's not go that far. I think that's one of the thoughts that Republicans have.
I pray that the Armed Services Committee is going to be taking this up along with other things like, you know, women in combat and, for that matter, gays in the military. But I understand that James Mattis has actually already endorsed the whole Obama social engineering agenda. Is that correct or not?
Well, he said at his confirmation hearing, I'm not going to change anything unless someone tells me it's a problem. Well, I think some of the services are going through the deputy secretary work and telling him that they do have some reservations about how this is going to be worked out, the funding, what does this do to our ability to fill billets, because it's going to mean that people are going to be taking time off for surgeries and things like that. So as July 1 approaches, you may see that Mattis will decide to delay it and let the military do more data collection, because actually, you know, they just lifted the ban on current troops last summer. So what data have they collected so far on how that's working? I doubt if they've collected much at all, because there just hasn't been the time. So it might be a good idea to first look at what's happening now before you make a very momentous decision that you're going to actively recruit people.
Hey, Rowan, there's so much more to talk about on all of that, and I look forward to visiting with you after the House does its work. But maybe we could turn to one of the other issues you've called attention to. It's been very troubling to me for a long time, and yet it seems not to have gotten the attention it deserves, and that is the connection between the North Koreans and the Iranians, both with respect to their ballistic missile programs and, it would appear, their nuclear weapons activities. Tell us what you have been finding on that score.
Well, last week, the main opposition group to the Iranian mullahs, the National Council of Resistance of Iran, put out a white paper on the ballistic missile programs now happening in Iran. And Iran, of course, is following the lead of North Korea. North Korea views ballistic missiles as vital to its survival and vital to keeping its neighbors intimidated and in check. And Iran is doing the exact same thing, according to the resistance group that has a very good spy network inside the country. They've proven that. And so what has Iran done since the joint agreement with the allies and President Obama? They have ramped up ballistic missile production, according to this group. They now are operating 42 ballistic missile centers doing various types of development and production work around the country. 12 of these had never been disclosed before until the spy network came up with the data. So the nuclear agreement has not curtailed Iran's devotion to ballistic missiles. If anything, it has increased. And of course, we know what Iran is after. They're after long-range missiles one day that can reach Europe and can reach our continent. That's their ultimate goal, number one. And number two, the group shows that they're putting more launch pads in the southern part of the country to threaten shipping, which would include us, of course.
Finally, you have been following closely over the years, Rowan, the saga of what's been happening in terms of a politicized intelligence community. The role in that by John Brennan, who was the CIA director under Barack Obama, of course, seems to be a particularly egregious example of the phenomenon and a contributor to it. What do we know, if anything, about Brennan and this so-called Steele dossier, this fabricated so-called intelligence report about Donald Trump's conduct in Russia that might have compromised him?
Well, here's one thing we know about John. It was Brennan who alerted Comey to what he thought were contacts between Trump people and Russians during the campaign. So if there's anybody singularly responsible for getting Comey to begin this Russian collusion investigation, it was John Brennan. And John Brennan, of course, was more than the CIA director. He was a confidant of President Obama. He was on the 2008 campaign. He was a White House advisor to Obama before he went to the CIA. And he hates Donald Trump.
Partisan through and through.
Yes. Now, on the Steele dossier, we know the FBI got the dossier. What is still a mystery is how much did they rely on it? Because Comey told Senator Grassley one story about it. Yes, yet there are some press reports that it was the dossier, which is totally discredited, which was used along with the Brennan information to start the investigation. So when Brennan is asked about the dossier, he said he did not rely on it. I think that needs to be tested by, you know, interrogation, maybe in a closed session when you can discuss classified information, because I find it hard to believe that a dossier that was in the hands of CIA and the hands of the FBI had no effect on John Brennan whatsoever. I doubt that highly.
Especially given his agenda, which, as you've documented so well, has been acted on in any number of settings, and I think to the great detriment of our, well, not only our intelligence community as a nonpartisan operation, but also to the detriment of our national security, indeed. We have to leave it at that. Rowan Scarborough, thank you so much for your time today. As always, it's great to talk with you. We look forward to doing so again.
to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.